Okay, so we are starting Shmuel Bet Perek Yud Gimel, which is starting the Tamar and Amnon story. I haven't quite finished with the whole Bat Sheva and David story. We spent a long time on it at the end of last year. We'll come back to it at some point when we come back to Bat Sheva. But what was such hashkacha pratis about starting Amnon and Tamar and Avshalom this week is that it's actually, according to a lot of midrashim and commentaries, hinted at in this week's parsha. So I was able to kind of make a parsha shir. So it's Parshat Ki Tetze, and it's where we learn about the Eshet Yafat Tohar. So we'll just read through the psukim quickly from the parsha, so you get the, it's like a chain of, it's individual halachot, about how to conduct yourselves as war, and then it seems to go into some random other halachot. But the way the rabbis do it is they tie all of these different halachot together as a chain of events. And so if you have David in mind here, and we'll see even more proofs for it, you can kind of see how this might reflect some of David HaMelech's life. Okay, so so when you go out into war against your enemies, and God will deliver him into your hands, and you take his captives. And you will see this beautiful woman here. Okay, so we're talking about this week's parsha because it relates to David and Amnon and Tamar and Avshalom. Okay, so you'll see in your captives a beautiful woman, and you will desire her, and you will take her to you as a woman, as a wife. And you will take her into your house and shave her head, and you'll make her grow her nails long. Rashi there explains that la'asot here means to grow. Okay? You'll take off her beautiful, her captive clothing, her dress. So Rashi here explains that the these nations that Bnei Israel would go to war against would actually dress up their women and send them to the front lines specifically for this purpose, to try to seduce them, as we saw with the Moabite woman and the Midianite woman, with Bilam. Okay, so v'yashva v'techa, and she'll sit in your house, u'bachta at avia v'et ima, and she'll cry for her father and her mother, yerach yamim, for a month, I think, v'acharkin tavo eleha u'v'alta v'aytalcha ilisha. And only after then can you then come unto her and she'll be to your wife. Now, there is a debate among the commentaries here about whether he has to wait to be intimate with her until after this whole month-long process, or if, and here's where we get into like yucky stuff, but it's going to be relevant to the story, if he rapes her on the battlefield and then has to go through this month-long process, and if he still likes her after he takes off the beautiful clothes and makes her nails grow and shaves her head and all these things, then if he doesn't like her, we're going to see in the psukim, and if you don't desire her, then you have to send her to on her way. You cannot sell her. She is not your property. For money. You can't benefit from her in any way because you raped her, you tortured her. Okay, and then it goes into if a man has two wives and he hates one and that one has the oldest son, he can't change that. And this has a lot of hints towards the Yaakov story with Rachel and Leah. And we're going to see, maybe we're not going to do it today, but maybe we'll go into it more. There's a lot of writing, not only comparing this series of events to the Yaakov story, but also the whole Amnon Tamar Avshalom with David HaMelech story with Yaakov and Rachel and Leah. We're going to hint at it today. Maybe we'll go into it more in depth another time because it really is interesting in all the intertextual dialogue there. Okay, so we'll skip past all of that and going down to Pasuk Yud Chet, Ki Yel Ish Ben Sora or Mora. So if a man has a rebellious son He doesn't listen to his father's voice, he doesn't listen to his mother's voice. And he turns from them and he doesn't listen to them. His parents capture him. And they take him to the elders of the city, and to the gates of his place. And they say to the elders of his city, our child is this rebellious child. He doesn't listen to our voices. And they translate that as, he's a glutton and a guzzler. Or gemuhu, kol anshei yiro, then everyone has to stone him. Ve'avanim, with stones. Ve'meit, and he dies. Ve'ar tahara mikirbecha, and you should burn out the evil from within you. Ve'kol Yisrael yishma'u ve'yira'u, and all of Israel will hear and will see. V'chiyah ve'ish, and then the last final pasuk is v'chiyah ve'ish chet. If there will be a man who commits sin, mishpat mavet, whose sentence is death, v'humat, and he is put to death, v'talita oto al etz, you will hang him on a tree. Okay, and I bolded that so that I remember to tell you something when we get to the rest of the story. Okay, so if you remember from David and Bathsheba, so as a result of David and Bathsheba, it's hinted that David will lose several children. We saw there was a little debate who are those children, including the first child he has with Bathsheba that we already saw dies. We're going to see some intertextuality there. And we're going to see the loss very quickly of Amnon. And it also looks like maybe Tamar. It never really tells us what happens to her at the end, but we have some hints that we're going to see. And then soon enough, Avshalom. So we're going to do a little bit of a breath today of our story of David, but we're going to come back and do everything in detail. I just wanted to get this whole breath so you see how it relates to the Parsha. Okay. So here we have the story of Avshalom and Tamar and Amnon. Okay, so we'll skip back and forth between the English and the Hebrew, I think. So let's start in Hebrew. Any questions on the... Okay. So this is after the whole Bathsheba thing and after the sun dies and then they conquer some more cities. Avshalom ben David achot yafa ushma tamar ve'yaveha Amnon ben David. Okay, even the whole way this is introduced is really strange. So it was after these things. And Avshalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister and her name was Tamar. Okay, now we could try to surmise a few things here. One, why isn't she mentioned as David's daughter? So according to Abarvanel, which I did not bring, she in fact is not David's daughter. She is the daughter of David's wife, who we'll see who the mother is in a minute. We'll go to that. And that would then alleviate a lot of the issues surrounding some of the language about between Tamar and Amnon when he wants to rape her and what she says in response. But it also... So meaning she's Avshalom's sister from another father, right? And so therefore Amnon would not be biologically related to her at all, okay? But based on... So it alleviates the Isser here, if indeed she's a sister, but the language kind of between Amnon and Tamar sort of hints that they are half-siblings, and so we're going to have to find the rabbis and the midrashim find other solutions. Okay, but it's just interesting. And here we see she's Yafa, she's beautiful, and we're reminded of the Eshet Yafa Torah, and again, I'll bring you the other sources to... Oh, maybe we should just look at it now. Okay, so let's look at it. So go to page 3 after the English. So this is all the way back from Shmuel Bet Perek Gimel. So and it talks about all the sons David had. We spent a long time talking about it. Amnon Bazak talks about, I think it's him, about how the way it's written in the Navi is that sometimes if it's saying, okay, David's starting to have children, let's list all his children, even if it's not chronologically accurate for that moment. Because Shlomo HaMelech is mentioned in this list, I think, if I remember. Okay, so his firstborn son is Amnon, and he was the son of Ahinoam HaYisraelit. And then the secondborn son is to Avigal. it's very interesting that we really don't hear anymore from Abigail or her children. They kind of leave the scene. And the third son is Avshalom ben Ma'akah bat Talmeh melech Geshur. So we're given all this information. Now you might think, because David is a king, and it's mentioning that she was the daughter of the king of Geshur, at first reading, if you didn't bother to look further, you might think that this is an alliance between two kings to have something peaceful.
Where did you get that list from?
So Absalom Ben, okay. Mm-hmm. So his mother's name is Ma'akah, and she's the daughter of Talmi, who was the king of Geshur. But now, let's look all the way back to Shmuel Aleph, Kaf Zayin. And this was when David had escaped Shaul, and he went to the king, so Achish, so the enemy territory, and he pretended to be an ally of the enemy, because my enemy's enemy is my friend, right, for Shaul. And he went to Tziklag, and if you look at page 4, I just included, Chaim Dworkin actually sent me the link. So you see it says scinews.com archaeology. So they think they actually discovered Tziklag, which is really cool. So you can just Google that and read about it. It's really interesting. So David took over the city of Tziklag, and then so as not to arouse suspicion with Achish, he would go and conquer places surrounding, and he would bring back booty, and he would kill tons of women and children and all sorts of people. He was very violent, but he had to keep up appearances that he was on Achish's side. Okay, and lo and behold, look at who are the people he conquers. Pasuk Chet. Vayal David ve'anshav v'yifshetu el ha-Geshuri. Okay, look, Melech Geshur. The Geshuri are one of the people that David's going around conquering. Okay, so what does that tell us here? It tells us that this was not an alliance between two kings. This was an Eshet Yafat Tor. This was the daughter of the king that he went and captured and fell in love with. Isn't that incredible? Okay, so I did not discover this myself. I forgot what I discovered it. It was some website that didn't have an author's name. It was so disappointing that, like, made all these connections. Okay. So that is the history of who these people are. Okay? So let's go to page 4 and let's just look at the Radak on that pasuk of the Avshalom ben Ma'akah, where it says who the mothers are of all of David's children. So Darshubo ki lefishaya ben Yafat Tor. So the Radak, everyone assumes that Avshalom is the son of a Yafat Tor. Shalakha David b'milchama. So the Radak is hinting at it, but you have to actually look at the Pesukim to actually see that it's even Pshat, that it is actually Pshat. Lefichach haya Avshalom sorer umora. So the Radak is making this connection. Because Avshalom was the daughter of this Yafat Tor, if you follow the chain of events in the Pesukim from this week's Parsha, Avshalom then becomes a ben sorer umora. Lechach nismecha parshat sorer umora leparshat Yafat Tor. And the Radak is telling us that's why they're next to each other in our Parsha. Lomar lecha kol hanosa ata. O isha she'ina haguna. So anybody who marries this captive woman, or any woman who's not proper for him, yotze mimena ben sora mera. Out of that will come a rebellious son. Benachon hu adrash, and this drash is proper. And remember, Radak, if you know anything about Radak, he's not into drash. He's into pshat. But he's saying that this is actually a proper drash. Ki ma'achar shehi shvuya, hare hi kemuchrechet lashuv ledat Yisrael. He's saying, he's being very psychologically astute. Since she's a captive, she was taken by force. And really, what are her choices? So if he doesn't like her, he sets her free. But what's a woman like that to do in society? Nothing. So she's kind of forced to stay in this relationship and to convert to the religion of Israel. V'liba lo nachon el hadat. But her heart is never really right with the religion. V'haneta yotze demut hashoresh. And this is the medieval Hebrew way of saying the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. The sprout comes out similar to the root. Or as my rabbi in Las Vegas, Rabbi Wein, he was giving a talk on how to raise kids Well, he was in Las Vegas, so like, how did he raise kids to stay from? So he opened up his talks with this expression, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. And then he says, unless, of course, that tree is on a really steep hill and there's a really strong wind, and you don't know where that apple is going to go. But in this case, the Radak is saying that like son, like mother, like son. Okay, okay, let's read this midrash also because it's relevant. So this is a midrash from Ki Tetzé. Let's just read it in English. When you go out to war against your enemies and the Lord your God gives them into your hand and you take them captive, our masters have taught, one good deed commandment brings about another good deed. You guys all know that expression. In Hebrew, mitzvah gererat mitzvah. And one transgression brings about another transgression. And when you see among the captives a woman of pretty form, whom you desire to take for a wife, and you shall bring her into your house, where she shall shave her head and do her nails, so that she will not find favor in his eyes. What is written after that, when a man has two wives in one house means strife in the house. Whenever we see two wives, most of the time, like in the story of Chana and Penina, they're actually, the second wife is actually called a tsara, a striver. And moreover, one loved and the other hated, or both of them hated. What is written after that? If one has a defiant and rebellious son. Whenever anyone marries a woman of pretty form, there results from it a defiant and rebellious son. Thus, we find it so in the case of David. Because as suggested in Shmuel Perkimel, he had desired Ma'acha bat Tameh, king of Geshur, while he had gone to war. So Absalom came out of him in this unit. The latter wanted to kill him, and according to Shmuel, slept with his 10 concubines before the eyes of all Israel and in broad daylight. Also because of him, several myriads from Israel were killed. Okay, so it's very interesting that we have in the Gemara that the Ben Tzora Mora never existed and never will exist, and yet we do have this example where a lot of Midrashim and commentaries really are comparing Absalom to the Ben Tzora Mora. Okay, and then if you look at the top of page 5, in fact, the Baal HaTurim, which is, the Baal HaTurim is the Tur from the Tur Shulchan Aruch, and I think Rabbi Ari Kahn was explaining who he was, that he has this incredible peirush on the Chumash, and yet all that was retained from it were these gematrias. And so, like, he would probably be horrified that he has all these brilliant commentaries, but in most Mikraot Gedolot editions, when you have it, it's gematrias. So Sorer, he says, is gematria of Avshalom ben David. And then he refers you to a section in Sanhedrin which talks about making this comparison of how he might be a Ben Tzora Mora. Okay. Okay, so let's continue reading back in Shmuel. Let's finish it in page 5. So the end of Absalom's life, where I had bolded that he hangs on a tree, the one who commits a sin for which you get death. So this is the story of Absalom at the end of his war with trying to overtake his father David, that if you just look in English, Absalom chanced to come before the servants of David, and Absalom was riding upon his mule, and the mule came under the thick boughs of the great terebinth, and his head caught hold in the terebinth, and he was placed between the heavens and the earth. So he's hanging on the tree, literally by his hair. And then they say that they saw him hanging, and Yoav then takes 3 darts in his hands and thrusts them into Absalom's heart while he was alive. And then 10 young men, they all struck Absalom and killed him. And Yoav blew with a shofar, and people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Yoav held back the people. And they took Absalom, and they cast him in the forest into the great pit, and they placed over him a very large heap of stones. If you remember from our Pesukim and our Parsha, he was also stoned, the person who's the Ben Tzora Mora. So we have this whole combination of all these Pesukim that you really see happening in Absalom. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, they're all sort of villains in the way they handle everything. Our true villain, I feel, is Amnon. So let's go back to our parak and see what the story between Amnon and Tamar. Because Absalom, in our story, hasn't really done anything wrong yet.
I just wanted to say, putting a heap of stones on top, that's not really the classic way, what you would imagine, being stoned.
Right, it's not, but it brings together the language.
Hint, you mean.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. Okay, so back to our story. So what happens? Vayetzer Amnon lehitzchalot ba'avur Tamar. So we're on page 2. So Amnon has like this love sickness for Tamar. And we're going to end with a story of a man who has a love sickness to a woman and what the halacha is for that, which is very interesting. Okay, so for Tamar, his sister. Now here's where you get into this kind of weird language of, could the Abarbanel have been right that they're actually not related, because we are referring to her as his sister. Kibitula.
Rodak has a commentary on that, you know.
Yeah.
That they were related.
Right.
But the fact was that she was born before Racha actually converted.
Yeah.
Therefore, she converted too, and therefore becomes a new person.
I'm going to talk about the whole halacha. It's called Haina Ravise. Okay. So actually, just a comment on my learning from the summer. It's actually interesting, like now that I have more of a sense of the halacha process, it adds really to Chumash learning, and it's unfortunate that more women who teach Chumash, Tanakh, don't have more of this sense of halacha process, like when you listen to the way people describe what we're going to talk about. So thank you. Yeah. Okay. So he has this love sickness for Tamar, and it actually gives a reason, ki betulahi, because she is a virgin. Okay, so it's just interesting to note that there's a reason given for the love. We have that with Yitzchak and Rivka, right? That it says Rivka loved Yaakov, and Yitzchak loved Esav because he put hunted game in his mouth, or as Rashi interprets, because he tricks him with his mouth. He says, how do you take miser from salt and from hay? So whenever there's a reason given, that's like a red flag, that it's not. And indeed, when we talk about we spent a lot of time talking about it with David and Yonatan, what is a love that lasts? That's David and Yonatan. And what is a love that doesn't last? That's Amnon and Tamar. And you can see here, because there's a reason.
Who says that?
That's in Pirkei Avot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Ve'yipaleh ve'enei Amnon la'asot la'meuma. And it was wondrous in the eyes of Amnon to do some kind of harm to her. Sorry, it translated here very differently than that. It says, it seemed difficult in Amnon's eyes to do anything unto her. But a mi'uma, I think, is usually used as some sort of harm. Okay. Gimel, ula Amnon rea. So Amnon had a friend who shmo Yonadav, ben Shim'a, achi David. So this is his cousin, actually, because it's the son of David's brother, and his name is Yonadav. We'll talk about him more next week. V'Yonadav ish chacham od. He was a very smart man. We don't know what kind of smart he was. Vayomer lo, madua ta kacha dal ben hamelech baboker, halo tagidli. So Yonadav notices that his friend is not himself and says, why are you becoming so thin, dal, son of the king, from morning to morning? Tell me. And he said to him, and Amnon said to him, et Tamar achot Avshalom achi ani ohev. I love Tamar, the sister of Avshalom, my brother. Okay, so again, you have all these weird, like, is she his sister? Is she his sister? It's just this strange language. Hey, vayomer lo Yonadav, shechav al mishkavcha, lie down in your bed, v'hitchal, and pretend that you're sick. Uba avicha lerotecha, and your father will come to see you. Ve'amar te'lav, tavona tamar achoti, v'tavreni lechem, ve'asta le'enai et habria, l'ma anesher e'e ve'achalti mi'ada. So tell your father to bring that Tamar, my sister, should come. So again, my sister, right? And here, and she should feed me bread. And this word, it's going to be repeated a lot of times, and we actually already saw it with David when he was davening for his sick son that ended up dying. And it uses the same shoresh of how he wouldn't eat anything while he was praying for him. So she should do it, this bread thing, this cooking thing, before my eyes, in order that I will see it and I will eat from her hand. Okay, so now we can take it. We'll discuss this more next week. But what did Yonadav really have in mind? What did he think Amnon had in mind? And what does he think he's setting up to? We all know what happens. So is Yonadav really at fault? Is he a mastermind behind this plan, or did he do it innocently? Like, I'll just give you an opportunity to see her because maybe the boys and the girls were kept really separately. You know, I don't know. And also, in the king's palace, there's always people around. We're going to see that also. So maybe Yonadav said this innocently. I don't know. So he feigned sickness, and the king came to see him. So he is saying, sorry, So he wants Tamar to make him latkes, is basically what it is, right? Levivot. And he'll eat from her hand. Zayin vayishlach David el Tamar habayta lemor lechina beit Amnon achicha ve'asu lo bria. So again, so just like we don't really know what Yonadav's intentions are, here we don't really know what David's intentions are. David sent Tamar to the house saying, go now to the house of Amnon, your brother, and make him this food. How are they translating this food? What? Yeah, food, just food. Okay, so Vatelech Tamar Beit Amnon Nachia, Vehu Shochev, Vatikachet Abatak, Vatalush, Vatalash, Vatalabev, Le'enav, Vatavashel et Halavavot. So we have a lot of verbs here. So Tamar went to the house of Amnon, her brother, so again, specifying her brother, and he is lying down, and she took the dough, and she kneaded it, and she, oh, that's a ketav and ketiv, sorry, I shouldn't have read that. So she kneaded it, and she made them into latkes before his eyes, and she baked the latkes. So dumplings, they're calling it. Okay. And she seems to be very efficient just doing her job. So she then took a pan and she fried it before him, and he refused to eat. So he then said, all of the men should get out of here, and all the men left. This is actually, and we'll go over to the sources another time, this is the source for the laws of Yichud. This is why men and women should not be alone together. Okay? Good. Vayomer Amnon el Tamar, Havi Habria Hacheder. So then he says to her, bring me this food to the room. So it must be like a chamber and an antechamber or something. Ve'avremi Yadech. And I will eat it from your hand. Vatikach Tamar et Levivot Asher Asta Vatavela Amnon Achiha Chadara. You can only imagine how she's feeling as she listens to his orders. Yud Aleph, Vatagesh Elav L'Echo Ve'Chazak Ba. She went to feed him, and he grabbed onto her. Vayomer la, boy shichvi miachoti. He said, please sleep with me, my sister. And this should all remind us of the language of Ishit Potifar and Yosef, right? So more things to compare it with. Vatomer lo al achi, al ta'aneni ki lo ya'asa kein b'Yisrael, al ta'asa et ha'nivala hazot. So she said to him, don't, my brother, don't torture me, because this is not done in Israel. What does this remind us of? Anybody? Dina. There's a lot of comparisons here with Dina. So we'll go over, another time we'll go over it to this. And it's also interesting because either she's not Jewish according to Barbanel, or as we'll see, as Joel said, she is a convert. We're going to see how that works. And here she says, this is not done in Israel. Don't do this nivala. Remember, we've had Naval, right, before, so reminiscent of that. Yud Gimel, Ve'ani ana olich et cherpati, and where will I go with my cherpa? I think that's also used in the Dina story, that word, my shame. Ve'atati ke'echad ha'nevalim b'Yisrael, and you will be one of, you'll be like Naval, you'll be one of these horrible people in Israel. Ve'ata daber na el hamelch, ki lo yima'ini mimacha. And now speak to the king, because he will not withhold me from you. Okay, so now this complicates, again, the whole brother-sister. How could David allow the relationship in that, which Joel hinted at, we're going to get to. V'lo ava lishmo b'kola, he didn't want to listen to her voice. V'chazek mimeno v'yaneha v'yishkav ota. So he grabs onto her, and he tortures her, and he sleeps with her. Okay, so I think we're going to stop our reading there, just so we have time to go into all the other things. Okay, so we don't know what's going to happen to Tamar. She goes to live in Avshalom's house. We'll read that when we get to it. But I just wanted to show you, so if you go back to page 5, this is, we're going to see this in the next parak when we learn more about Avshalom, but just to point it out here, so Avshalom was also a beautiful man. Uka Avshalom lo haya ish yafe b'kol Yisrael. There was no man more as beautiful as Avshalom. Lehalel ma'od, he was totally praiseworthy. Mikaf raglov ad katkato, from his foot to his skull. Lo haya b'omum, he did not have any blemish. And he would shave his head, and it would be so heavy, he had such a big head full of hair. And then kaf zayin, vayivaldu le'avshalom shosha banim, he had three sons, who we're going to see all die. Ubat echat, and one daughter, Ushma Tamar. So that's very telling. And that might be what happened to Tamar, that she dies and Avshalom names his daughter after her. He haita isha yifat ma'ar. And she was also beautiful, just like her aunt. Okay, so page 6. So let's see who Tamar was. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda in the name of Rav, Tamar bat yifat tor haita. So this is the original source in the Gemara that makes the stated claim that Tamar was this yifat tor. Shenamar, as it says, so just the Steinsaltz, this is a Steinsaltz commentary from the Sfaria. So she was taken and captain, was born before her mother converted, therefore Tamar was not considered the daughter of David according to Halacha. The proof of this is in what she said to Amnon, son of David, as it is stated, now therefore speak please to the king, for he will not withhold me from you. And if it enters your mind to say that she was the daughter of a woman David married, would David had permitted Amnon's sister to him as a wife? Rather, learn from this verse that she was the daughter of a beautiful woman converted after Tamar was born. So halachically, Tamar was not a daughter of David. And then the Tosfot there has an interesting...
Can you just, like, understand that?
Okay, so you don't... I'm going to give you... The halacha is going to be in 2 sources, so you'll see. But because... Okay, so you'll see it then. Yeah. So let's just look at the Tosfot there. Akener elamemar de Tamar lo haita bat David, she'imar kvar haita me'uberet. So therefore, Tamar was not a daughter of David because her mother was already pregnant, kishabat l'machama, when she came to the war. V'had dichtiv in Shmuel bet Yudgimel, ki kein til b'shena benot malachim me'ilim mitoch shegadla b'chikos shel David, kari la bat melch. So why is she called the daughter of the king? In this pasuk, she wore the clothing of the daughters of kings. She's called this because she was raised in his house, and therefore they called her the daughter of the king. Okay, now let's talk about the halakha. So this is we learn this from the laws of chatzitza, okay? So a chatzitza, as most of us know in this room, I think all of us, is something that would cause a blockage to you and the waters of the mikveh. And so let's read the Gemara. I'm going to read it in the Hebrew and explain it. Elahad amar rava, nochrit me'uberet, shenit gaira. So a Gentile pregnant woman that converts. Bena ein tsarich tfila. Her child does not need to dunk also. No, does not need immersion. Amai ein tsarich tfila. Why wouldn't the child also have to immerse in the mikveh? V'chitema mishum de Rav Yitzchak, damar Rav Yitzchak, davar Torah, rubo umakpid alav chotzitz. You would think, so it's not what you think. I used to always think before learning this, that the child of a converted woman who was pregnant with that child when she converted was born to a Jewish woman. So therefore they're Jewish. That's what I always thought, right? I think a lot of people think that. But really what it's saying is that, no, that child, that fetus, is converted at the same time as his mother in the mikveh. And now the question is, but it's halacha in the Torah that it's not considered an effective immersion if your body is majority covered by something else that blocks you from the water. Okay? Today we already count it as a minority if you don't want it there. So the Devar Torah is rubo umakpid alav. So according to the Torah, if it's covering the majority of your body and you don't want it there, it's a chatzitza. Rubo she'ena makpid alav, but majority of your body that you don't care about, eno chotzitz. That's not a chatzitza. V'ha amar av kahana, lo shanu elu rubo. So when the Gemara taught it was talking about the majority of the body, Rav Kahana saying, aval kulo, but his entire body, the entire fetus is covered up by his mother's body. Chotzitz, that's a chatzitza. Nobody would disagree with that. Shani uber, a fetus is different, de hainu revise. And this, so hainu revise means, do they even translate it? I guess I didn't put it down. So hainu revise is a status that this is how it exists. Okay? I actually asked one of my rabbis when we were learning about this how to translate this. So he was like, that's how it exists. It can't exist without it. So because the fetus cannot exist outside its mother's body, the fact that it's covered by its mother's body doesn't matter. And this is actually very relevant to women who have certain conditions. The one example given by the Rama, it's actually a really funny example. a woman who wakes up in the morning and has all sorts of knots in her hair because the shadim, these demons, put them in her hair. And if she tries to remove the knots, she can really harm herself and do major damage, and she can't do anything to remove the knots. So that's considered a haina ravise. She can still immerse in the mikveh even though her hair is full of knots. Okay? So it's just really fascinating, and there's so many implications for halacha that I wasn't aware of, that a fetus to a non-Jewish woman who converts while she's pregnant with the fetus is also considered a convert. So you can imagine that this would be relevant for marrying kohanim, or, you know, whatever laws are relevant for converts would also be relevant for this fetus. Okay, so that is that. Now,
so all to say that the mother's not chatzitza to the fetus.
Exactly, and it's
so
also...
her emotion also covers...
Exactly, her. And therefore Tamar is also a convert, which makes her not related halachically to her half-brother.
Okay. Is that... That's the bit I don't understand. She's a convert, so she's not related to him. Why? Like, what's the status of her?
So she was... So her mother was pregnant. So even if...
Did they have a relation in common?
So this is where you get into the debate where we talked about the Eshet Yifat Tor. If the order of events was that he raped her on the battlefield and then went through this month-long period, mm-hmm. so she would be David's daughter biologically, mm-hmm. but spiritually she would be a convert. It's sort of like if a whole family converts, right? They're reborn. And the children of the converts are still called Ben Avram Vesara, right? Like, it's sad. But that's the spiritual reality.
But does that trump biology? Is that what you're saying in this case? You're saying that she's not a sister. She's like, I mean, because you've got those two.
Right.
You know, the...
I think Deravanan, the rabbi's decree. So Doraita, they could marry each other. But Deravanan, they can't.
Really?
So is it two different Shito? Like, one is saying maybe she was already pregnant.
Exactly.
And biologically, David wasn't her father at
right.
all.
Right.
Right.
Or biologically he was, but because of the gayrus.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, so now...
So you mean some people say what Tamar just said, like that?
Yeah. So the Abarvanel is the one who says she was already pregnant.
Right, okay.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to finish with one more source from the Gemara, just because it leaves such a bad taste. And like I said, the rabbis learned many lessons from this story. Yichud is going to come out of this, and we'll look at the sources for that later. And also, this story, I think this story is a commentary on this. I think this story in the Gemara that we're going to read about is a commentary on the story of Amnon and Tamar. And we see just the sexual morals and ethics within Judaism as a result of it. So I'll just read it in English. On page 7. Apropos the discussion of the obligation to allow oneself to be killed rather than engage in forbidden sexual intercourse. Okay, this is the Yaharog Ve'al Yavor. The Gemara notes that Rav Yehuda says that Rav says there was an incident involving a certain man who set his eyes upon a certain woman and passion rose in his heart. It sounds like Amnon, right? To the point that he became deathly ill. And they came and asked doctors what was to be done with him. And the doctor said he will have no cure until she engages in sexual intercourse with him. The sages said, let him die, and she may not engage in sexual intercourse with him. The doctor said, she should at least stand naked before him. The sages said, let him die, and she may not stand naked before him. The doctor suggested, the woman should at least converse with him behind a fence in a secluded area so that he should derive a small amount of pleasure from the encounter. The sages insisted, let him die, and she may not converse with him behind a fence. So I think... you can see how seriously the rabbis took this story and the repercussions of the story and what happened to everyone in this story. And this is the result of it, that we treat any kind of improper sexual behavior as improper. And that this man cannot force a woman to do anything, even to save his life. It's not a pikuach nefesh because it's so inappropriate. And that, I think, is a result of this story. And as Rashi says And the rabbis really struggle with this whole idea of the Eshet Yifat Tor and why it would be allowed. And please God, we will not have to go to war and these things will not happen. And they will not be relevant halachot for us. No man will ever engage that way. Okay, thanks everybody for coming.